From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and sound bites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Sitting in for Tony is today's host, Jody Heiss.
Well, good afternoon. Hope you had a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Welcome to this Monday edition of Washington Watch. I am your host, Jody Heiss, Senior Vice President here at the Family Research Council and President of FRC Action. All right, coming up on today's program, the Democratic National Convention begins today in Chicago. President Biden is scheduled to speak tonight. And of course, this is coming just weeks after he was literally forced to step down, which in itself brought some renewed optimism for Democrats as it relates to their presidential chances. But could the pro-Hamas protesters who are demonstrating in Chicago this week put a damper on Kamala Harris's election bid?
So we're expecting large protests throughout the city for the rest of the week. We're prepared for that. We hope for the exact same outcome for every protest, that everyone gets to express their First Amendment rights. We don't have any incidents. If that occurs, then we've had the most successful Democratic National Convention that we can imagine.
Well, that was Chicago Police Superintendent Larry Snelling earlier today. And I'll get a read on the DNC from North Carolina Congressman Dr. Greg Murphy in just a few moments. And a trio of House committees conducted some impeachment inquiries into President Biden. You probably remember that. Well, they released their findings today. And wow, they cited overwhelming evidence that the president committed impeachable conduct and abused his office in order to enrich his family. I'll be talking with Texas Congressman Pete Sessions, who's a member of the House Oversight and Accountability Committee, a little bit later in the program. And then we had some good news that actually came out last Friday. The U.S. Supreme Court rejected an emergency request from the Biden administration to enforce portions of its radical Title IX rewrite. And look, as school begins, this is one of those things that would have allowed biological men in the women's bathrooms, locker rooms, and dorms. It dealt with 10 different states, and a lower court blocked this rewrite.
The government did not like the fact that we obtained the injunction, so they went to the United States Supreme Court to see if they could block it. And this is not the first time they've tried. This is, in fact, the third time they've tried. They've on two other occasions attempted to do the same thing, but they never had actually rewritten the Title IX rules. This is probably the largest effort to date to make this particular cultural and policy change.
Well, that was Louisiana Attorney General Liz Merle speaking to Fox News over the weekend about the Biden-Harris administration's attempt to vacate her state's injunction against their Title IX rewrite. And we'll be hearing from Matt Sharp, who's the Senior Counsel and Director of the Center for Public Affairs at Alliance Defending Freedom, on that issue. And of course, ADF was also very much a tip of the spear on that whole issue. And then finally, we'll be talking to Dr. Andrew Walker and his wife, Christian. Together, they've got a brand new book out that's designed to help parents and grandparents talk to the children about extremely difficult issues that are facing today's culture from a biblical perspective. So we've got a lot coming your way today. I want to encourage you to catch every bit of it. But if by any chance you don't, you can always go catch it at our website, TonyPerkins.com. Lots of resources, as you well know, that are available there, including archive programs that a lot of rich info. So check it out, TonyPerkins.com. And this election year, before we get started, let me just say this because we're excited to bring this to you. I want to invite you to join us in Washington, D.C. from October the 3rd to the 6th at our Pray, Vote, Stand Summit. Folks, for those of you who have been here, you know this is one of the most powerful events you will ever attend. And we want you to participate and be a part of it. This is a national gathering of primarily spiritually active, governance-engaged conservatives. We call them SageCons. But it's individuals who really recognize that change must flow from spiritual renewal. And right now, registration is open. And I ask you to join us as we pray for our nation, as we engage in our government, in our culture, as we stand for biblical truth alongside other Christian leaders and worldview experts and government officials. Folks, it's happening right now. We encourage you to go register. We look forward to seeing you on October 3rd. You can go to prayvotestand.org for details and to register. All right, let's jump into the issues for today. The Democratic National Convention kicks off today in Chicago. And while Democrats may have been renewed in terms of their optimism since they booted President Biden from the race, DNC organizers face well-founded fears that the convention may be upstaged by some pro-Hamas demonstrators in the streets of Chicago. So what can we really expect this week at that DNC convention? Well, joining me now to discuss this and more is Congressman Greg Murphy. He represents his district, serves on three different committees. He's from the great state of North Carolina. Dr. Murphy, always great to see you, my friend. Welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Jody. Good to see you. Good to see you.
Well, likewise to you. All right, let's hit this Democratic National Convention. A lot going on. What do you expect to take place this week?
Jody, I expect a full circus, They're going to nominate somebody who was not nominated by the electoral process, did not go through a primary. In fact, the last primary she went through as a presidential candidate, she did not even make it to Iowa. And so through coronation and through essentially, as you've pointed out, kicking Joe Biden out of the way, and I think Pelosi most likely is thought to have orchestrated that, they're going to coronate a woman who didn't ever have to debate on the primary stage to get her nomination. And, you know, as we're going to maybe talk about, some of the things she's going to say are so outlandish, especially economically, that I think America will realize she's really a too far radical left candidate for us all.
Yeah. And that would apply whether we're talking economics or abortion or a host of other issues. And I'm sure all of it will come up. You know, one of the things, and I really wanted to get your reaction on this, one of the things that's happening in Chicago this week, Planned Parenthood, they have set up a mobile center offering free abortions and vasectomies to DNC attendees. I saw that. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah, I had hoped that was just a joke or something on, you know, The Onion or something. But if that's true, how depraved is that? They are praising murdering a child. You know, that even takes it to an extreme that you couldn't even think about such nonsense, praising getting abortions. You know, it is a sad event for a woman. It's obviously sad for the child. But here they're celebrating it. What type of demonic presence is there with Planned Parenthood celebrating this at the DNC? It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it is unbelievable. It's unthinkable. And there they are set up right. And by the way, the federal government gives over $600 million a year to Planned Parenthood. And here they are offering free abortions right there at the DNC convention.
With the vasectomies. If they want to do those, that's fine. It'll, you know, take fewer Democrats in the future. But the fact that they're praising murdering children and babies, that's ghoulish. It's demonic.
It really is. All right. Well, also taking place that we know of is some pro-Hamas protesters. They're going to be attempting, quite frankly, to disrupt a lot of the proceedings. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah. You know, diversity, careful what you ask for. And this is what's happened is that you've invited militant Islamic militants into the country who are praising another ghoulish group that on October the 7th invaded and butchered the citizens of Israel who were at a concert or pulled out of their homes. And you know, again, you get what you ask for. Karma is real. And so they're going to have identification of what's going to happen. You know, it's still to this day, I still don't know how any understand how any Jewish person would identify with the Democratic Party, maybe if abortion, maybe if some of the other social issues. But fact that the party and its leadership hate Israel so much, the fatherland of Jews, How can you ever support a party that does that? It is beyond me. I just don't understand it.
Really good question. A good question. And hopefully as this election cycle unfolds, that question will be faced by many.
Yeah.
And have to be answered. You know, speaking of all the pro-Hamas stuff, I'm sure you saw Columbia University's president resigned last week over this whole anti-Semitism stuff, that how it was horribly handled. What do you expect across the country as students are going back?
You know, I think, you know, I experienced this with my alma mater and a previous president, that she thought her role was to be a political leader rather than president of a college. Fortunately, the new fellow who's in place doesn't see it that way. But no college leadership, no university leadership should use that as a standing stool for their own political views. It's fine to foster political discussions, but it should never, ever be about pushing an agenda. And it crept up with her. She could, it's a hard line to toe at some of those Ivy League schools, but she could have delineated this and found a pathway where it's fine to speak, but you've got to speak on both sides. No belligerence. You know, UCLA, the law school, finally got overturned that they were obviously segregating and pushing, discriminating against Jewish people. You know, it's taken way too long for her to resign. And, you know, I'm fine if it sends a message to all our leadership at colleges and universities. Stay out of politics. I'll say the same for both.
And protect the students who are there.
Yes.
All right. Turning back to the DNC here real quickly, and we've only got a couple of minutes. President Biden is going to be passing the baton to Kamala Harris tonight. But do you expect a lot of carryover from the Biden administration to a Harris administration?
You know, Jody, I think what we're going to see is a Biden administration on nuclear power, because she's already come out with this nonsense about telling businesses you can only charge so much, or that now she wants to raise the capital gain tax from 21% up into 39 or 41%, second highest in the OECD, where she will kill American business. It's a great book if you take the religious overtones out of it, called Atlas Shrugged, that talked about how you lower the entire society. And that's what she's going to do. I hope America soundingly rejects these nonsensical and, in fact, communistic Marxist policies that she is espousing. It's unbelievable. If we thought it was bad during the Biden administration, lo and behold, we are in for terror if she gets elected.
Yeah, we saw some of that, as you referenced her speech Friday on the economy. It's shocking. It's stunning. It's frightening to think about where, if she had the administration, where she would take this country. It's frightening.
Jody, she doesn't understand why inflation occurs. You think inflation stops just because you tell people to charge more? Actually, that sets in a pattern of decreased growth, decreased employment. Then, if you put it to the end, it's breadlines and everything else. America has always lived upon its growth, and a pro-tax policy, pro-business tax policy is what's enabled us to do this. If she kills us, she kills us around the world.
Dr. Greg Murphy of North Carolina, always great to see you. Thanks for coming on Washington Watch. All right, friends, after the break, the Supreme Court delivered a victory on Friday when it rejected the Biden administration's effort to overturn lower court rulings about Title IX and that rewrite. We'll discuss all the details when we come back right after the break.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable Word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone, too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon, sagecon, to learn more. That's sagecon, sagecon, to learn more.
Hi, I'm Georgina, an intern here at Family Research Council, and I wanted to take a moment to tell you about FRC's incredible internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and a development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. This program features hands-on professional experience here in Washington, D.C., weekly biblical worldview training, tours around the district, opportunities to meet some of the country's most prominent policy experts, and more. The program also includes free housing, a meal stipend, and is available in spring, summer, and fall. If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, as a current intern, I cannot recommend this program enough. For more information or to apply, please go to frc.org/internships. Again, that's frc.org/internships. Apply today.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss. So glad to have you joining us today. All right. Last Friday, the U.S. Supreme Court rejected the Biden-Harris administration's request to enforce portions of its revised Title IX rules. Now, this is the set of rules which illegally attempts to change the meaning of the word sex to include gender identity. The Biden administration was seeking to allow biological men in women's bathrooms, locker rooms, and dorms. This would have applied to 10 states where there are, by the way, already state-level and local-level rules to prevent such things. So what does all of this mean to the other 40 states? What does it mean for Title IX revisions moving forward? To discuss all this with me is Matt Sharp. He's a senior counsel and director of the Center for Public Policy at Alliance Defending Freedom, which is the organization that represents a female athlete, Christian teachers, and a Louisiana school board in all of these lawsuits. Matt, welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to see you.
Thanks for having me on, Jody.
All right. So congratulations on this really a big Supreme Court win. Tell us about it.
Yeah, we were very excited to see the Supreme Court make this ruling. You know, we've seen for years now the Biden-Harris administration with its dangerous rewriting of Title IX, how it undermines opportunities for women, impacts fairness in sports, and harms girls' privacy and safety. We've had 22 states that have gotten injunctions against this, and to see the Supreme Court uphold and allow those injunctions to keep going into effect in these 10 states, as you mentioned, is a big win for women and people everywhere that are concerned about the radical gender ideology that's being pushed by the Biden-Harris administration.
Well, and it's interesting, the fact that this affects 10 states specifically, just as a practical matter, here we are with a new school year upon us. There have been some other lower court decisions blocking these rules in other states as well. But what's the current landscape from a national perspective on this issue? What are we looking like?
Yeah. Well, again, we're seeing states across the country that have been told by the Biden-Harris administration that they were going to have to allow boys to go into girls' locker rooms and restrooms. And these injunctions that are happening now and that the Supreme Court let go into effect are really the stopgap against that happening. It's making sure that as students are going back, that you're not going to have your daughter walk into a locker room to find a guy sitting there as she's getting dressed for class, or that a young boy may not be forced to use an inaccurate name or pronoun. So what these rulings are doing is giving clarity. They're giving confidence to school officials in these 10 states and the numerous others that have lower level injunctions, that they don't have to follow this unlawful Biden-Harris rewriting of Title IX, that they continue to put their students' safety and privacy and the fairness for young women in sports at the forefront of their policies as they're heading to the, into the school year.
So about how many states are we talking about now where the Biden administration's rules are not going to be enforced?
Yeah. So we've got the 10 states that were involved in the Supreme Court's ruling on Friday. In addition, there's another about dozen states that all have lower level court injunctions. So total, I think we've got about 22 states. There's a few others that there's ongoing litigation. We're hopeful there that this lower courts will likewise give an injunction so that schools in those states don't have to comply with this unlawful Title IX rewriting of what it means to be male and female, of what sex means under Title IX. And so with all of that, we may see over half the country here within the next few weeks have an injunction protecting kids' privacy and safety, protecting schools from losing funding, and ultimately rebuking the Biden-Harris administration for trying to rewrite Title IX.
Well, that is so encouraging. And once again, let me just say a huge hats off to you and ADF. Incredible job with all of this. And thank you. It's great to see the continued progress nationally on this issue. Now, I guess somewhat disturbing, perhaps a little bit of silver lining in all of this, it was a 5-4 decision with the Supreme Court. But as I understand it, the unsigned portion might indicate that a lot, perhaps all the justices, at least to some degree, are in agreement that the lower courts were proper to block some of these changes. Is there anything we can read into the unsigned portion?
Yeah, to your point, all nine of the justices agreed to let the injunction against the Title IX redefinition of sex, the other elements that try and insert gender identity into Title IX, all nine justices agreed to let that injunction stay in effect. That's a huge victory when all nine justices recognize that the Biden administration's, that the injunction ought to be allowed. There was a little bit of quibbling where we had that 5-4 split about should this apply only to those specific parts of Title IX or to the entire rule itself. But I think the real thing people need to take hold of is all nine justices said, we're going to allow these injunctions in these 10 states. This is Louisiana, Tennessee, Kentucky, and several other states. All nine justices agreed to let those injunctions stay on the books while these cases move forward. And I think that's a huge victory for common sense, for women's equal opportunities, and ultimately for the rule of law, telling the Biden-Harris administration that they cannot rewrite this federal law that's been on the books for decades and has been so important to countless women across the country.
Well, and I think that does send a message to perhaps some future lawsuits. And I mean, you know this a whole lot better than I do. But I mean, obviously, this is not a final decision. The lawsuits are going to be returned now to the lower courts. So eventually, when all is said and done, this might go right back to the Supreme Court. Is that right?
That's right. These cases are still moving along. I know with the Tennessee and Kentucky cases, for example, I think they're scheduled for an expedited argument here pretty soon. But the big takeaway from all of this is we're seeing time and time again, as courts are looking at this, they're ruling that the Biden-Harris administration's rewrite of Title IX went far beyond the law, that it doesn't have the authority to override Congress when Congress wrote this decades ago, trying to create equal opportunities for women. And here's the Biden-Harris administration saying, you know what, we're going to co-opt that law and we're going to use it to push radical gender ideology on schools across the country. So we're hopeful we're going to see more courts and that ultimately the Supreme Court will agree and strike down this rule in its entirety.
I tell you, you know, it seems like there's so much bad news, Matt, these days. And to see so many cases like this where there are victories, where it's ADF and some other fantastic organizations out there pushing the needle, it just brings great encouragement to all of us. Thank you so much. All right, Matt Sharp from Alliance Defending Freedom, thank you so much for joining us today on Washington Watch. All right, much more yet to cover as we continue to unfold page after page for you here on Washington Watch. Coming up next after the break, there were three House committees had joined together in their efforts, and now they have released their report regarding the Biden impeachment inquiry this morning. Wow, what a report. We'll be discussing it in detail after the break, so stay tuned. Much more coming your way.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss. Glad to have you on board with us. All right, this morning, a report was released by three different House committees that have been conducting an inquiry into how President Biden may have engaged in impeachable conduct and abused his office in order to enrich his family. And wow, the report cites overwhelming evidence alleging that the Biden family received tens of millions of dollars from foreign interests by, quote, leading those interests to believe that such payments would provide them access to and influence with President Biden. Wow. Since the committees did not formally recommend Congress to move forward with impeaching President Biden, what does all this mean in the coming days? Well, joining me now to discuss this and more is Congressman Pete Sessions. He serves on one of those three committees, the House Oversight and Accountability Committee. He represents the 17th Congressional District of the great state of Texas. Congressman Sessions, welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to see you.
Jody, thank you very much. I know she didn't admit that you and I know each other pretty well.
Absolutely. Well, I'll admit it now. Pete and I go way back, and I can't tell you, it was great to serve with you in Congress and in the Oversight Committee, and great to have you now on the program with us. All right, let's start with what the committee's discovered. Give me the lowdown.
Well, the first of all, and I want to go back a little bit, if I can, Mr. Chairman, because I think it's important for the American public to know that when Donald Trump was the president of the United States of America, the United States House of Representatives formally moved to where they would offer evidence of and open up on an impeachment issue. And during that period of time, the Department of Justice and the Federal Bureau of Investigation aided and helped not just the House of Representatives, but the committees. And there were three of them that became deeply involved in the impeachment of the President of the United States. That was done because it was considered official business of the House of Representatives. Well, all of a sudden, when it became Joe Biden, the administration, the Department of Justice, changed their tune, including instructions to the Federal Bureau of Investigation about not becoming involved in what was official business by the House of Representatives, where it dealt with a vote on the floor and moving forward. And so I think it's important to note that courts and the American people are not used to members of Congress giving information about criminal referral matters. And that's exactly what's happened here. So, as you may recall, Congressman Heist, that when the Department of Justice and the FBI were pushed even further, they said, well, we will comply if the House actually moves legislation from the body that they did not think we could do. And they moved that then to us, saying that's when we would become engaged. They've not been engaged. They've not allowed their investigators, who I would remind you that if you lie to a federal investigator, it is a criminal matter that you can be held liable for. And so we show up with investigators without a badge, without a gun, with subpoena authority, but not with those things that would come with a court order behind them. So I think it's important to note that this, for the last 2 years or more, this investigation has gone on with hearings, investigations, official inquiries of the United States House of Representatives, and we've been lied to, we have been denied access, and yet we have also received a great deal of information, not only from banks, but also business information and people who came and gave testimony to the committee and to the subcommittees about the activities, up to and including official employees of the IRS who spoke very plainly about how they were after money that came from suspicious reports given through bank, that a bank provided the information, and they were denied the ability to move forward by the Department of Justice asking information, not just about Hunter Biden, but then also about what was the President of the United States. And this is what has caused Republicans to jump up and down so hard for that during President Trump, the Department of Justice operated in a fair and balanced way with the Department of Justice and with their investigators, the Federal Bureau of Investigation. And now we are denied both of those avenues, and they call it political witch hunt.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Listen, we've got less than a minute. Where's this going? What would you like to see happen next, real quickly?
Well, I think, Jody, that Congressman, what you've seen happened is the committee has now decided that now that President Biden is on the backside of his career, his downside, that we're going to release the information. We're going to let the American people know some $27 million directly related to criminal activity by the President of the United States. And
$27 million.
$27 million.
Wow. Wow. Congressman Pete Sessions from Texas, always great to see you. Thank you so much for coming on Washington Watch, breaking this down. Look forward to talking with you more as this continues to go forward. All right, friends, after the break, we've got more coming your way. We're going to be joined by a couple who have a new book out, a new resource. It's designed to help parents and grandparents talk to their children about pressing issues of the day from a biblical perspective. You don't want to miss this. Stay tuned. We'll bring it your way in just a moment.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation. bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Hi, welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Jody Heiss, your host. Thank you so much for joining us today. All right, children and teens today are navigating some extremely difficult situations and issues. They're living in a time in our world when popular culture and cultural beliefs absolutely contradict the clear teachings of Scripture. And so when inevitable questions arise, you have parents and grandparents who oftentimes do not feel equipped, but in reality, they must be equipped with sound biblical answers to help guide their children through these days. And trust me, if parents and grandparents are not able to teach their children and help navigate them through these issues, the world will certainly do it. I know my wife and I just came off about 5 weeks of involvement with what we call a grandkids camp, where we bring them in every summer and just try to invest in them and these things. But listen, some of these issues are tough. Well, we have a husband and wife duo, Andrew and Christian Walker. They've recently released an incredible book, a trusted guide that's designed to help parents quickly and effectively respond to some of these important issues on a wide range of topics, everything from abortion to sexuality, transgenderism, technology, political engagement, a host of things. So joining me now to discuss this are Dr. Andrew Walker and his wife, Christian. They are authors of the book, What to Say When, A Parent's Guide to Navigating Cultural Chaos for Children and Teens. Dr. and Mrs. Walker, welcome to Washington Watch. It's an honor to have you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
All right, so congratulations on this book. Andrew, I know you've written a number of books on a variety of topics, from natural law to transgenderism to religious liberty. What is it about the current culture and the current movement that prompted the two of you to unite efforts and forces and to write this book right now when you did?
Well, we see ourselves living in a really chaotic and tumultuous point in time right now in American history. And what we decided to do is to use our relative talents and gifts as an ethics professor at Southern Seminary, and then my wife as an elementary school teacher, to kind of fuse our talents together to want to do the very thing that I think we have to do in this moment, which is to equip the next generation with biblical truth. And the front line with that is the parents, it's the front lines of the local church. And sadly, we don't have a lot of resources right now, making that accessible and easy for parents who are caught up in 1,000 different things every single day to help equip their kids.
So, Christian, I know there was a specific, and I'd like to hear this, I'd like for our audience to hear this, a specific incident that made you realize just how necessary a resource like this would be for parents. Tell us about that.
I am constantly caught off guard when my kids ask me questions in the car and on the way home from school. And our daughter saw some yard signs at a recent election that we were having. There were signs to vote yes for an abortion amendment and no for an abortion amendment. And she was asking about why do some people have a yes for this and a no for that? And so we had to have a conversation about what abortion was and why some people had yard signs for that abortion amendment and no for that abortion amendment. She was 8 years old at the time. And so we weren't quite ready to have to say, are parents equipped to have these conversations that encounter politics and abortion rights and human dignity and all of these really controversial subjects with their children in age-appropriate ways, all because she saw yard signs in our neighborhood? And so I really wanted to be a part of doing this with Andrew, who often hears parents ask these questions when he speaks around the country. How do I have these conversations with my kids? And so I needed this as a parent myself, and we wanted to be a part of bringing this to parents.
And I can't tell you, and I know that you know this because I talked to a lot of parents as well, a resource like this is desperately needed. I mean, we're living in a time, unfortunately, where so many churches are not addressing these issues, and so people are not getting a biblical worldview perspective by and large. Certainly, there are some that are, thank God for that. But a resource to help parents look at these issues, and as you said, Christian, in an age-appropriate way to deal with them, is just incredibly important. Well, let's talk about some of the issues. Andrew, I'll start with you, but we can go back and forth. Let's talk some about the issues that you discuss, abortion, sexuality, transgender. You know them a whole lot better than I do. What are some of these issues? Let's go through some of them.
Sure. So I think we're living in a moment right now where the attack on the human person is where the enemy is most fervently set his sights and set his targets on. And so what we wanted to do in a book like this is not use terms like theological anthropology, but to think about if the most important question in our age right now is what does it mean to be a human? And to ask the question, where is the enemy attacking the image of God? Well, that necessarily is going to bring us to issues of abortion. It's going to bring us to issues of human dignity writ large. But then it's also going to bring us to issues like the purpose of our embodiment as males and females, which that is then going to speak to issues regarding gender identity type topics. And so we wanted to be clear about what we believe the Bible teaches on these issues. But we wanted to do this, again, in an age-appropriate, accessible way. I know that I'm a professor, and so I had to constantly work against the temptation to want to be kind of heady and academic. And so what we really strove to do in this volume is to make it as accessible as possible. I would write something maybe a little bit challenging or heady, and my wife would say, nope, rewrite that statement. And so that was what our intention was because, again, you can have the right ideas, but if you're not communicating the right ideas in the right ways to the right people, all we're doing is just leaving the battlefield We're leaving the battlefield, and we're not necessarily even fighting the right ways. And what we know right now is that the enemy is seeking to kill, steal, and destroy. And we believe, with a biblical worldview, it produces the only truest, fullest account of human flourishing and human dignity.
Absolutely. So, Christian, thank you for the admonition you gave to make it readable. To doing so makes it something that the rest of us can understand and greatly utilize. So let's talk about, transgenderism. Andrew brought that up, the essence of male and female. How do you deal with that in a book like this in an age-appropriate way?
Well, the first part of each chapter is specifically for parents to understand what the Bible says about each topic. So it's going to be a little bit more in depth. And then after that, each cultural controversial topic is broken down into three floors. The first floor is the most simple, basic, around age 4 to 8. The second floor is around age 8 to 12, and the third floor is around age 12 to 16 or 18. So it kind of starts to build a little bit. But with transgenderism, we really want to focus on starting with understanding that God made us with our bodies, male and female, in Genesis 1, and that's really good. And so instead of all these topics, but transgenderism especially, instead of looking at these topics in a negative light, we're not going to change our bodies, we're not going to do anything wrong. Giving a different light on these, looking at these topics from a good perspective. What does God's plan look like in a good way? In God's good and natural plan, it looks like having a male and female body that was made differently on purpose, in a good way. And so starting that with little 4 and 5 year olds, you are a boy and you are a girl, and that is good. And boys and girls are different, and that is good. And then just slowly building upon the differences in that. But we've also have parts in the book where we have some questions, some prompts that parents can ask their kids. And starting in that second floor, we've developed some questions for parents to start asking. Have you ever felt different in your body? Have you had any friends that have ever felt different in your body? We want parents to start having an open dialogue with their kids about those kinds of feelings that their children might be experiencing, because they need to be able to have those conversations and be able to stand up with the truth with those children, to know that those are just feelings. We are not going to change the biology that God has given us, but parents can work through those feelings with their kids or help their children have conversations with their friends to know what the truth is against the lies of culture that are happening around them right now.
Excellent. I think one of the issues that many parents need help with, I mean, all these issues, all of them, parents, grandparents need help with, but one of them that it's almost become such a norm is these little things right here, the technology. Everybody's walking around with these things, and we know the Bible does not speak to technology per se, but the principles certainly do. Andrew, how do you deal with this? How do you help parents understand both the dangers but the proper use of technology?
Yeah, what a great question. I think it begins exactly where you began, which is putting this in the category of wisdom, putting this in the category of parental authority. And it seems unwise to hand over an incredibly powerful device that can take a child anywhere the child wants to go without any guard limits, without any types of protections in place. And so one of the things that we're talking about in this book, and we're not necessarily super tech savvy individuals ourselves, but all we're trying to do is to say, parents, you have been placed in your parent, in your child's life as an authority, which means you have wisdom and you have discretion over them, which means the first thing you can do with technology is to simply be intentional about it, have a plan about it. We know a lot of individuals, it seems, who have basically just handed a phone over to a child with complete unrestricted access. And I think in this culture, that is more or less a nuclear weapon getting ready to go off. And so what wow. we've even done with our young 13-year-old at this point, and again, we're not trying to say that we've solved this mystery ourselves, but we've been really pleased so far with our child and the technology that she has, because she has limits on it. And I think a lot of times parents aren't even aware of the limits and the kind of tools at their disposal that these technology units allow us to have in order to protect our children. And so it's really, it's an educational issue as much as it is a wisdom issue.
Absolutely. Christian, let me come back to you. There are so many topics that you could have chosen to include in this. I mean, there are so many issues facing young people today. Why did you choose to tackle the particular issues that you did?
I think we chose these issues because they were just mostly at the forefront of what people are talking about, are the hardest issues to talk to their children about right now. But we are kind of keeping a list of other issues that we know are out there as well. And so maybe there'll be another book with more issues in the future. But these are the ones that are most talked about right now. They're the ones that my mom friends and I are talking about. They're the ones that Andrew has the most questions about when he's out speaking. So these were just kind of ones that are just simmering the most in the culture right now.
Well, I love the way you describe the way the book is organized, where it all starts with a biblical worldview on a topic to begin with. And then there are some basic truths that every parent should know. There's conversation starters, there's memory verses, there's all sorts of stuff. I love the way you put all this to do. How can this be used? I mean, what do you envision this book being utilized as around the home? I mean, we're in a home, you've got the book, you've got some kids. What do you see happening?
I really hope that this book will be a defensive tool. You're driving home from school and your kids ask a question and you grab the book and you find the topic and you find their age and you tell them really quickly what they need to know, ask them some questions. So a quick reference tool almost in a defensive way to combat what they're asking. But also we really pray that this could be used as an offensive tool. And we hope to use this in our home as almost a family devotional tool. So we would gather around and study a topic together. Maybe you're going to encounter a family member who is a homosexual at a gathering, or maybe you're about to engage political signs because there's an election coming up. And so your family needs to study the political engagement chapter together. But we're going to gather our family together and we would read the parent section together to have an understanding of that. Our whole family would memorize the memory verse together. We would look through the different age groups and gather that together with our children and just move together as a family through that, almost like a catechism. Talk about the questions.
Andrew, real quickly, running out of time, where can people get the book?
They can find the book at crossway.com. They can find the book at Barnes & Noble. I think Amazon might be the easiest resource at this point. And thankfully, Amazon hasn't canceled the book, so we have that to say for it as well. But I think the biggest thing we want to say to parents is that you've got to take the initiative and responsibility to be the primary discipler
Absolutely.
On these pressing cultural issues.
Thank you, Andrew and Christian Walker. What do I say when? Folks, go get the book. Powerful resource. That wraps up today's edition of Washington Watch. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a great evening.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.